Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, who is back from his travels, Mr. Chad Riley.
I have returned from a long sojourn in a foreign land called also, Las Vegas.
Also with us tonight, we also have Mr. Spencer Williams.
I have not been traveling. I've been here.
Actually, you did travel this past, or the weekend before last.
That's not recent.
But it's recent enough.
Recent is a subjective term.
You know what? You're a subjective term. And we got a great show in store for you tonight as we will be discussing the recent Academy Awards ceremony and all the winners and everything that happened. So we're going to be diving into that and talking about all the things that were noteworthy and maybe some things you may have missed. So stick around as we dive deep into that. But before we do, Chad, give them opening credits.
Sure. Well, on or off the red carpet, and let's be honest, we're usually off, the Filmlosophers podcast is presented without commercial interruptions by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Whenever you're ready to get your award season fixed, chances are you can find us chatting about the same topics like Bradley Cooper's mom, the enduring genius of Queen, or Spike Lee's hat game. Strong.
Very
Save yourself the time of looking for the content you enjoy and simply subscribe to the podcast. New episodes of The Filmlosophers debut each Wednesday on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
Hey, you can't forget Helen Mirren's hat game, too.
I can.
You can call it an after party if you want to. Just know that you have to bring your own food and drink. Come hang out with us online anytime on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. When you get tired of hearing acceptance speeches from this year's Oscar winners, you should cut over to the good stuff. And by good stuff, we mean our library of more than 150 quality film reviews. Just visit filmlosophers.com to catch up on all the ones you might have missed.
There you go, filmlosophers.com. But as we said, we are fresh off of the most recent, most known, most notable, I would have to say, award ceremony for Hollywood, and that is the Academy Awards Oscar ceremony.
Yeah, it's like the grand crescendo of awards season.
Although not a lot of people know that that's not the only award show that happens.
No, far from.
It just tends to cap off the award season, because I don't think there's really any other larger ones after this one. But most of them do happen pretty well late into like the year prior. So like some of them start in like November and December and then move through. But those are for other types of films and whatnot.
Yeah,
but.
And you've got all the guilds, the Producers Guild, the Directors Guild, the Writers Guild, the Screen Actors Guild, the BAFTAs, the Golden Globes, the People's Choice, blah, 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 yada, yada. And then
those are just
the Academy
few.
Awards.
Of course.
I mean, the Grammys already happened too, and that's music.
That's true. Very true. So we donned our hats, we grabbed our monocles, we got our popcorn, and we sat down, and we endured for a few hours.
And our brass knuckles.
No joke. No joke. Because Spencer was fighting.
Why E.T.? Why is that playing right now?
Oh, my God.
Wow.
you just heard it. I was like, wait, what?
So Spence may not know this, but this is the medley that is played at the closing of the Oscar ceremony. So this is the music that they used to use when they would play individuals off the stage, and then they would play this at the very end of the ceremony to let everybody know that the ceremony was over.
That's so lazy, stealing from John Williams.
Well, I mean, since John Williams wrote all of this,
I'm sure John Williams got paid plenty.
Yeah.
He wasn't stolen from.
Trust me, John Williams is living pretty fat right now. But no, we got ourselves all gussied up and we got ready and we endured through all of the hours of the Oscars. And
might I say, Eddie, you look fantastic in fake eyelashes.
Thank you. I really did. It took me a while to find the right ones at the right store. But boy, I'll tell you what, if one thing that I got from Lady Gaga, it's them eyelash game. So just saying. But like I said, we saw the show. We got a chance to check out some of our favorite parts of it. We were surprised. We expected some of it. I mean, it was just a hodgepodge of different emotions and reactions, needless to say. So before we jump into the conversation of the Oscars, there's a couple little things that I wanted to go through, and that is just a little bit of the numbers if you're unaware of what it takes for the Oscars. So just a heads up, it actually takes $44 million to actually put on the ceremony. $44 million. That is a lot of moolah.
Also, did you see the building that they're finishing construction
yes.
on for the museum? So they can pump $44 million into the ceremony and still have money left yep. over to redo the building. Now, granted, I have been to the old building or the existing building. Or
it's the Dolby Theater, right?
No. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts, like the actual museum, year-round museum space
yeah.
that has everything in it. It's not a very pretty building. It might be the same building. I'm rarely down in the Los Angeles area,
yeah,
but
it makes two of us.
It's kind of just a nondescript building for the most part. But this thing that they're building down there is enormous and gorgeous and, you know, whatever. But yeah, there's some money in the Academy.
Yeah, when they started unveiling that whole animation of what the building's going to look like
yeah.
and the finished structure, I'm like, it looks like one of them arenas or the stadiums that they build for like football teams and whatnot. So, like we said, $44 million to put it on every year. This year, we saw 29.6 million viewers this year, which it's up from last year. Last year, it ended out with 26.5, but this still makes the second lowest viewership in Oscar history. And that's going back all the way to the beginning. So that might say a lot in terms of maybe people aren't really looking forward to seeing a bunch of rich people come together and award each other and pat each other on the back.
I wonder why.
That's what I read today. I was looking and I'm like, so for a long time, I've enjoyed seeing the Oscars because of the fact that number one, it would validate the things that I would see in certain films. Like if I really liked a film and I was kind of the only person in the room who was like, oh, that was a dumb film. I was more for this film. And I'm like, well, no, because there are merits for this film. And then you see the Oscars and you're like, ha, you can point at people's face.
See, interestingly enough, that I have the flip version of that. And that's why I don't really like the Oscars. Or like, there's movies I really like. And then the Oscars were like, those are stupid. And I'm like, well, you're stupid. I don't care about your award show. You're just a bunch of 40-20 people. And I don't have time for you and your teacup poodles.
Wow.
This seems very specific.
That really does.
Spencer, it begs the question, who hurt you?
Exactly. Spencer grumbles.
The man is the answer.
But I mean, it's such a great experience to see not just the long-lasting individuals who go every year and whatnot, but to see like a lot of the newcomers come into the fray. Like the actress who was the lead for Roma, seeing her come in with her mom, or seeing, you know, somebody like Regina King, who this was her first time being nominated and seeing her come in, you know, and then knowing things like Greta Gerwig last year, who won quite a bit with her film Lady Bird, and knowing that there was a possibility of seeing her maybe show up because she's a hometown hero. She's a hometown director. And seeing just a lot of what is coming up and the movements that are happening there within Hollywood.
I mean, you began with Queen
yeah.
on stage. You really can't knock a live performance from, well, part of Queen.
Yeah.
I mean, not all of Queen, but, you know, there are some good parts and bad parts, I think. Every year there are because,
yeah.
I mean, what are you're really just paying in the form of attention and time.
Yeah.
You're paying to watch an awards ceremony.
Essentially.
That's not really all that exciting, but I used to watch them every year as a kid, you know, and you mm-hmm. imagine like, hey, I wonder if I would ever get up there and like, you know, make it in that regard. And what would I say? Like, you've only got a minute.
Yeah.
You know, like they will play you off the stage musically. They will shut off your microphone.
Which they did.
And I don't want to be the third or fourth guy in line. Like,
yeah.
I'd want to have it like to myself or something, but
yeah.
you know, I mean, it's fun to dream and to kind of project into the future when you're a kid. I think when you're an adult watching it, it's, to me, I think it's a little less alluring. Like, it's more like, when does this thing get over?
True. Another quick piece of information. $2.6 million is what it costs for a 30-second commercial. So you think about commercials and you think about what some of the bigger prices for commercials are, and you think Super Bowl. Well, apparently, there's a large, hefty cost to buy a 30-second spot during the Academy Awards. And it's $2.6 million, which happens to just be half of what it costs for a commercial during the Super Bowl. But I was thinking about it. I'm like, I don't think I've ever paid much attention to the commercials during the Oscars. Like, usually the bathroom is what I would be more focused on when the awards, when the commercials came on. As soon as the awards, like, and when we come back, we have Julia Roberts, Mel Gibson, and the Blue Man Group or something. And then I'd run to the bathroom as soon as I knew they were going to commercial break. I don't ever remember sticking around because it's never been like a highlight. So it's interesting that there's such a focus in terms of like, oh, yeah, here's some.
Well, I mean, they I think that they definitely have changed their game a little bit in terms of quite a few of the commercials were, in a way that you see during the Super Bowl, several of the commercials were very much entertainment industry themed.
True.
We also had the like live action second trailer for Bimba. I mean, the Lion King. And
Kimba.
Or Kimba.
Sorry, I was like, Kimba. Bimba.
I'm like, and I should know this for some reason, but
but there were several commercials that were like, they knew that the people who were watching were only going to be film buffs for the most part, and they tailored their commercials for that audience, which
yeah.
I thought was interesting. They also now, for the past decade or so, have been previewing the green room and like the design of the green room and sort of walking you into the green room so you can see where all the presenters hang out before they go on stage, or after you win, this is the first place that you walk to behind, you know, the curtain or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because as a kid, like, you never really thought about those things. But now as an adult, you know, like, the presenters all get goodie bags with like thousands of dollars worth of stuff in them.
Which that was the one I was thinking about that. I'm like, I could put that fact in there, but I didn't. But I believe every single goodie bag from the Academy was valued at $100,000.
Wow. That's like for poor people or something.
Poor people. And that makes a lot of sense. Like, there's more exposure to what goes on behind the scenes and seeing a lot more of that aspect. And interestingly enough, talking about behind the scenes, this is also the second time the Oscars were hostless. The first time actually happened in 1989 during the 61st Academy Awards, which it was actually intentional. It wasn't due to controversy or whatnot. The coordinator who put it on decided to just have people who are relevant to the category announce the nominations and announce the winner.
I mean, I can't knock it. After 60 years of a pattern, to do a little bit of a pattern disruptor,
yeah,
that's not a bad choice.
It was also during this time when they began to utilize the phrase "and the Oscar goes to" as opposed to the "and the winner is." So transitioning that as well. And then also showcasing, like you were mentioning, showcasing the green room as a celebrity suite, so to say. So like with couches and stuff like that and amenities, and making it more visible for the telecast. That's also when that started. So it's unique that you mentioned that, because that actually was started during that particular.
So 30 years ago, not 10 years ago, like I said.
Give or take.
Interesting. Okay. I'll take it.
So, like we said, we got a chance to check them out, and I kind of want to go around the table, and we usually talk about expectations in terms of with film, where we wonder what a film's going to be like, what are we going to, you know, expect when we come into the theater, is it going to be a good experience, bad experience? I kind of want to know, what were your expectations in terms of, like, predictions? Were some of the things that you were hoping for, did you have high hopes for some of the films you were rooting for? Did you think they had a prayer? Do you think they were actually going to sweep? I just kind of want to know, what were some of your thoughts? And I want to kind of start with Spence, because I feel like Spence is going to be the quickest one in answering.
Right. Because I only had really one expectation going into this whole thing.
What was that?
Black Panther had better win for best costume because, like, they did a ridiculous job. Everyone looked amazing. I don't normally notice costumes in movies, but, like, I looked up how they even made, like, Angela Bassett's character, uh-huh. and whatever, like, how they actually made her, like, outfit. Like, they 3D printed that, like, headdress thing she was wearing. Yeah. It's actually Zulu inspired. It was actually really interesting. So they did a great job with that, and that was the only thing where it's like they had better win, because, like, there's a lot of attention to detail, and I know other people did too, but, like, it was, like, impressive where, like, they try to incorporate, like, you know, things from, like, African history past into, like, this Afrofuturism type thing.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful blend, because usually in a costume category, you see period pieces,
right,
where they're replicating what clothing styles used to look like, or you see, like, futuristic stuff, because they're creating new styles of clothing and fashion that haven't existed necessarily before. Black Panther is kind of both.
Yeah.
At the same time, which is really,
you have to be really creative to, like, come up with something good for that.
Yeah, let alone, like, set design and all that.
In terms of my expectations, I just honestly, the one of the biggest ones that I expected was, I didn't expect much to change because of the fact that there wasn't going to be a host. I thought there was a lot of, like, there was a lot of uproar and controversy surrounding that. And then there was a lot of people who were like, oh, I'm not going to take the job if he's not going to take the job or whatever. And I'm like, naturally, you maybe see the host maybe 5 times out of the entire night. And then to close it all off, I didn't really, except for the monologue, I didn't really expect the host to play such a prominent role. And the whole controversy with Kevin Hart not being able to do it or not choosing not to do it, I honestly didn't think it was going to be that much of a hit to the already busy schedule of the Oscars. Because naturally, during the Oscars, they already have other people present awards.
Yeah, that part's totally normal.
Yeah, that hasn't changed. So I was really thinking about it and mulling it over. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I don't think anything else is going to be different. So that was one of my expectations. That was my biggest one, because I'm like, this is just too much drama. There's too much focus on this when there shouldn't be. In reality, like, whatever the reasons why, that's not what I'm looking at. I'm just looking at the fact that I don't think it's going to have that much of an impact on the night as a whole. The other thing that I was expecting was, I was expecting from the awards to see a bit more diversity in the winners, because of the fact that if you look at some of the patterns with Golden Globes, and I'm one of those people who I like to look at some of the patterns with, like, the BAFTAs and the Golden Globes and things like that, and see how certain films are winning and certain films are getting more interest and are getting more focus, and then seeing how much it actually dictates the winners for the Academy Awards. And actually, we did an episode on this a while back talking about the Oscars. We'll probably get to the episode later on. But there was an episode we did where we actually talked about the history of the Oscars and the history of the award season, where sometimes some of these other award shows or ceremonies dictate, quite possibly, who may win in this ceremony. Which, it's not foolproof. It's just one of those things where it's like, oh, this has maybe a 90% chance of winning, or this one has a 75% chance of winning.
And you at least walk away knowing of the whole crop of nominees, you're pretty sure of, like, what the two front runners are going to be for any given category, so you know who's not likely to win. Mm-hmm. That's kind of awkward to say it that way, but, you know, it generally, between all the different ceremonies that happen, all the different awards, by the time you get to the Academy Awards, it's pretty clear who your front runners are.
Oh, no doubt.
In all the big categories, at least.
Yeah. So what about you?
Not that there's such a thing as a small category.
No, there isn't. Just so nobody sends us angry letters. So go ahead, Chad. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know that I had a lot of expectations. I had hopes, I guess, in terms of I wanted Black Panther to make history as a superhero Oscar-winning, like, not other genre films have won Oscars. And certainly you've got the technical Oscars that happen, like, 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, and, you know, visual effects and all that kind of stuff. They typically tend to sweep in there. But, like, things like Best Picture, like to be nominated, is already history making.
True.
It would have been really cool if they had won. They didn't. But it would have been cool if they did. I love the like costuming and production design, because we even talked about that in our episode on Black Panther, because the amount of research and vision casting that was done to not just choose one African culture to emulate, but that's to right. really embrace dozens of cultures visually and like through the decisions of the characters and whatever, like that's monumental. It you don't have to do that to make a good superhero movie, but the fact that they did that and they made a good superhero movie, I think it's remarkable.
Yeah. It really is.
The score, to me, that's a no-brainer. And also, again, sticking with the genre, I really was fingers crossed about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse for Best Animated, because it's just, if you haven't seen it, it's visually unlike any movie you've ever seen. It's really, really cool. So the fact that that did win Animated Feature made me very happy. Other things, I don't know that I really had expectations for, like, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Picture. There was a part of me that was cringing a little bit. Actually, this is sort of throwing ourselves under the bus. But back in November, we went to a screening of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
And then because we had a series of schedule conflicts, we never completed and published our episode reviewing that movie. So I was like, I kind of hope it doesn't win a whole lot, because we saw it and we had things to say, but none of our listeners would know that.
It's true.
And then they won several things here.
Womp, womp, womp. So our bad. and it's true. I do remember that. And just too many things came up at the same time, and we're just unable to record the episode. But we'll make sure to be more vigilant next time. So obviously the things that everybody knows about with the Oscars are a lot of the musical numbers that happen. You have a lot of the performances from the film itself, or from the films that are nominated themselves. You get to experience some of the more unique pieces that make those films known. Last year, there was a lot of buzz for the Hugh Jackman film, The Greatest Showman.
Right.
With that whole number, the one that's most known, This Is Me.
Yeah,
I believe so. There's been, like, throughout history, a lot of people recognize a lot of the more unique performances, more outstanding performances. This year,
I mean, Celine Dion, wasn't it the Oscars where she like beat her chest and everybody, like, well, not everybody, on a gas tire, did it repeatedly on SNL after that?
Yes.
Yeah.
We had a few unique musical numbers here. Obviously, the opening is usually a large musical number. Last year's opening number was actually a full-on musical between, wasn't that for La La Land? They did the whole La La Land recreation type thing of the beginning of the film. They pretty much mirrored or mimicked La La Land through the opening last year. And then this...
Was that just last year? I thought it was 2 years ago. It was 2 years ago that La La Land was up and Moonlight took it instead, right? Because last year had to...
You're right.
Literally they wrote the thing so clearly on the envelope that us viewing at home can read that it's the right category. Like, you can literally sit now on your couch and call the Oscars and say, no, they've got the wrong envelope.
They're reading it wrong. No, you're right. 2 years ago.
Two years ago, yeah.
Because that was the year that Jimmy Fallon. I'm sorry. I get those two. Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake.
His best bro.
Yeah, they did that whole musical number together.
Yeah.
This year, the opening musical number was the band Queen with the front runner or the front man of Adam Lambert singing We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions. My biggest question, I'm not that big of a, I remember when Adam Lambert was on American Idol and whatnot, and he's a great singer. I just felt like they really missed the boat on that one, where they could have actually utilized Mark Martel, the man who was actually behind the scenes in Bohemian Rhapsody, doing the majority of the live vocals for the film. The man who actually sounds like Freddie Mercury. Like,
uncannily, ridiculously close.
Yeah. It's insane how much he sounds like Freddie Mercury. And I was hoping, because I heard the lick as soon as the lights started going up and you were watching the band, you're like, oh, they're opening with a Queen song. And then you see the front man and it's Adam Lambert. Oh, okay. Like, it was still okay. It was a good performance, but I mean, needless to say, it's like having a really great steak at like the best steakhouse that you could ever go to. And then you come home and you go to Red Lobster to get your, you know, little filet mignon that you get for $12.99, and you're like, I mean, it's not bad.
I'm sorry, have you been paid by Red Lobster for that ad?
No, but I just couldn't think of another steakhouse that I didn't want to like poke the bear at, just in case they're listening. But it's like,
now you got me hungry for cheddar bacon biscuits. That's all I'm saying.
It seemed like that was a no-brainer to me. And them going with Adam Lambert, which I could have swore, wasn't Adam Lambert doing some type of tribute band thing or something? There was something, someone in talks of saying, oh, Adam Lambert's going to help out with this, you know, tribute thing for Queen or whatever, for something else prior to the film being debuted. It was a while back, but I guess that never came to pass. And then you have this performance, and I'm like, I know there could have been more, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think they, if you put Mr. Martell as the front man, he's going to sound like Freddie Mercury, and that'd be kind of cool from a novelty standpoint, but most people don't know who he is. Whereas people who pay attention to pop culture and whatever probably have at least heard the name Adam Lambert before. Yeah. He was on American Idol. I think Martell was on American Idol at one point too. He just didn't go through, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Yeah. But yeah, it was a popularity, not popularity contest, but it's like we have to use a familiar face and not an unfamiliar face. And yeah, his voice doesn't match Freddie's the way that Mark's does.
No.
But I mean, you know, I don't know. He had his eyeshadow on and his fancy suit jacket and he lived it up, for the crowd. I was delighted to see Glenn Close kind of getting down in the front row. As soon as that song started, she's like up on her feet in her gown, like, yes, let's rock out to Queen at the Oscars.
And aside from those performances, you also had the performance of one of the songs from the Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary by Jennifer Hudson. Which that one seemed. Now, the thing is, Jennifer Hudson's a remarkable singer.
World class.
Yeah. I really felt like, and me and Chad and Spencer were talking about this before we went on air, really felt like she did not do her best on that. And I don't think it was her fault. I honestly believe that it may have been like an in-ear issue, like hearing herself in her ear. Because as a singer, in order for you to sing on stage performance-wise, you have to be able to hear yourself so you can make sure that what you're singing is on key and in the right tonality. And I think one of the things that may have been an issue during the Oscars was some of them were unable to hear themselves, or at least with her, because it seemed like she wasn't hearing herself well enough and she was struggling to hit the particular key of each, or the particular note of each of those words.
Yeah, and I would also put forward the notion, I already said this off the air, the song. Hats off to people who write songs and want their songs to send a message. Mm. In terms of the musicality of the song, there really wasn't that much there. So I think she was adding some gusto to it. I mean, I don't know. I haven't heard the recorded version of the song. It was like, and this happens on the Oscars, to be quite honest. It's not the Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the Tonys.
No.
It's the Oscars, and quite often of the five songs that are nominated, there's like one that's a truly good, like really good musical song,
mm-hmm.
and the others are kind of like, oh, that's cute. And this one, not to downplay the importance of the message, but like it wasn't an elaborate song. Like there wasn't a lot of musicality. There wasn't a lot of bells and whistles to the way that it was composed.
Yeah.
And so she's adding a lot of bells and whistles vocally that didn't quite make it, but I would point out she's one of the judges on The Voice UK,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's an 8-hour time difference between London and Los Angeles.
That is true.
So
I didn't think of that.
You know, right. I mean, like 4 p.m. or well, no, it was more like 6:30, 7 p.m. Los Angeles time would have been like 2 in the morning.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Because that's where she's probably spending most of her time right now, because that reality show is live and active now. So she probably flew in, was jet lagged and whatnot. Not that I'm making excuses, but there's probably a logical reason for why she didn't sound her best.
Did you happen to check it out, Spence? Her performance?
Nope.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I you know what? I can.
Spencer, did you even watch the Oscars?
I did not. I read an article of like who's the list of winners and losers. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well,
I think you have a lot in common with a lot of people.
Yeah, like
I don't fault you for it.
Like honestly, how long was this?
It's usually like three hours, 3.5.
No, I'm not doing that. That's doing way too much.
Nah, bro.
I know I'm on a movie podcast, but like, no. Like that's a long time. I did it last year, and you know, it was nice to experience it once in my lifetime, and I think I'm pretty much done.
Oh, there you go.
That's very direct.
Some of the better performances, I thought, the song from Buster Scruggs, the Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Hey, I like their outfits. They matched.
I actually really enjoyed that movie. It was a Netflix film, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. It was kind of a Western anthology film. It was by the Coen brothers. It was fun. It was unique. And the song was very catchy. Not like this song's going to get stuck inside your head catchy, but it was catchy enough that I was tapping along as I was listening to them sing and play. And then, of course, you have to have, with all the film nominees that are in this show, you had to have a performance of the most sung karaoke song so far, Shallow.
It is not a karaoke song. It is a legit song on the radio.
Well, a lot of people are singing.
Karaoke song, wow.
I'm just saying, a lot of people are singing it.
Everybody's doing covers of it. That's for sure.
So I'm going to say this, and I mean this with all respect to significant others, but of the individuals that I'm talking about. But I just feel like, oh my gosh, like Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, they seem like they've been together for at least 15 years, and they've got 2 kids at home on the farm. And this is what they do on the weekends, and they're just here to share their love. Like, I felt like after the end of that piano performance, I was like, yeah, the only thing that's missing is them just like kissing and just being like, oh, hi, honey, you're doing a great job, whatever. Like, it seemed like they were just so into each other. And yes, acting can be one part of it, but that just seemed a little too genuine to me. I don't know.
After reading about how Michael B. Jordan had to go to therapy for getting rid of Killmonger, I think now, like, actors have, like, lingering feelings from, like, some of their roles. Maybe that's what that is.
I don't know. All I know is, like, that face that she... Someone had put a meme out there with a picture of her face looking at Bradley Cooper at the end of it and says, she looks at Bradley Cooper the way I look at burritos.
Well, like, she's probably looking at her dead husband. That's probably why she was all like that.
Spoiler alert.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed. Yeah. I don't know. It just seemed very interesting. Like their on stage chemistry, it's all there. Like they could play that whole Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn type dynamic.
Sure.
For whatever else, not in the future, and I'd believe it. Like, without a doubt.
Totally.
But...
Well, and to a certain extent, I think whether you're a fan or not, because of the way the movie ends, you kind of want them to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, if you buy into the fantasy of the movie enough that doesn't end up okay, and then you see the same two faces back together doing the most famous song of the year, like, you kind of want them to be okay.
Because they're pretty much singing it to each other. Like, they've forgotten the entire crowd. And it's ridiculous. Look at that.
Yeah, I've been looking through the photos of that.
I'm like, that woman is going to eat that man.
Did you take a picture of your computer earlier today so that you could reference the photo?
I think you did it right now.
Just for right now. That was it. Because it's so unique. It's like, you rarely get
creep.
You rarely get an on-screen couple who has natural chemistry like that. Like, I can't think of another couple other than, like, maybe, I don't know, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. Like, yeah. So far, they've had really good natural on-screen chemistry. I can't really think of much anybody else. And then you have the introduction of these two. And it's like, oh, wow. Like, this seems pretty natural. Like, I would believe if they walked down the street holding hands and somebody sent, you know, took a picture, I would believe that that was true. Because they just seem so into each other. But I don't know. That's just my personal thoughts.
I'd buy it. And not buy it. Like, I wouldn't pay to see that. I just, it would be believable.
Spence, what do you think?
Did you watch the performance of Shallow?
No. Well, I know he didn't watch it.
I'm looking at the photo.
I'm just going off of his deep analysis of the pictures.
You're doing like a frame by frame.
Yeah, basically.
I did like the format of the song. Like, it sounded like it did in the movie versus any kind of like edgier.
Yeah, they didn't go for the pre-recorded and then just mimic the words. They were actually singing it live in the moment.
And you could tell.
So, but what is your analysis, Mr. Spencer, after dropping stuff over there?
You know, I found that burritos photo you're talking about. It's right there. But, like, yeah, you know, I'm still sticking with my initial thing. Like, you know, they're really into their movie life.
I don't know.
You have, like, a remnant of the character that you've played.
Because he was supposed to sing with her the song on piano in the movie. And
is this the official ending of the movie? Then what? Is what happened at the Oscars?
Yes, basically.
Okay. I'll take that over.
That's your happy ending.
There we go.
That's the happy ending we all dream of. That's why we go to movies.
That's how that movie should have actually ended, actually, now I think about it.
And I had mentioned earlier, obviously, in between and announcing a lot of these awards, we didn't have a host. The show was hostless. But like I said, I don't think it really played that much of an impact. Each of the individuals whom, much like the 61st Academy Awards that I mentioned earlier, a lot of the presenters of the awards seem to have some type of connection to the actual award that was being given. Like the one with Jason Momoa and Helen Mirren, they actually, Jason Momoa actually was on the set when they were doing the Free Solo filming, because he's an extreme sports kind of guy.
He's an extreme guy, period.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen him throw javelins.
Oh, true. I've seen him chug a whole pint of beer and throw an axe.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, he can do his own thing. You had like Samuel L. Jackson presenting.
Oh my gosh.
Which
we have the koala challenge.
Yes.
Thank you, Spike Lee.
Yes. That was so awesome. But
now, can I just say, if like Spencer, you have not seen these moments, from the moment that Samuel L. Jackson walks out with Brie Larson, and they're together, I mean, they're both in Captain Marvel coming out in a few days, actually, and they walk out and they do the thing, and he starts this whole thing by giving the Knicks score.
Yes.
Specifically for Spike Lee, right? And then, like, they have their little, like, winky, like, romantic moment, whatever. But then, like, Black Klansman actually does win for adapted screenplay. Adapted screenplay, right? Yeah,
yes,
adapted screenplay. And Spike Lee, in all his purple finery and his brass knuckles, comes up and jumps bodily onto Samuel L. Jackson.
Yep.
Hugs him like a koala on a tree.
And mind you, it wasn't, it's not out of nowhere, because even the way Samuel L. Jackson's like, oh, blah, 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 and Spike Lee, like if it was the announcement at the end of a video game or at the end of a basketball game or something, it's like he had excitement in his
voice.
They
had a private moment. I mean, you talk about chemistry, move over Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. We're talking Samuel L. Jackson and Spike Lee.
All
that's
day,
chemistry.
Every day. Well, and that was one of like Samuel L. Jackson's first films, you know, with Spike Lee. So it you can tell like the camaraderie as well as the admiration and respect, you know. And then not to mention, this was Spike Lee's first ever non-honorary Oscar. So, you know, it's really cool to see the one who was with him in the beginning to be there to give to him his very first ever earned.
And I do have to say, sometimes you get people with big personalities like Spike Lee. I mean, the first 20 seconds of his speech is bleeped out. Like, they had to, like, silence it, you know, because of whatever was being said on mic. But then then after you get past the like excited expletives, then you get into like the close up of him delivering his, you know, speech that's written down on paper, and you see the paper shaking.
Oh yeah.
You know, not necessarily nerves, but at least excitement. I think it's really cool when you see how, like, beyond whatever persona a person creates and maintains as a part of the Hollywood machine, when you kind of break through that shell and you see just that fully relatable human excitement, nervousness, like bewilderment, how did you pick me, like whatever, and you get that energy, it's really, really cool.
Yeah. And it just, they, it works. Like, on screen, on stage, it just works. Seeing them two and the way they just, they need to do another movie together. The last time they did a movie was Do the Right Thing back in, like, 1980-something. And it's like, Spike Lee needs to do something for Sam Jackson. And I would totally pay to see it, you know. But going back to the whole host thing, I don't think, and I just want to kind of dig into this a second, I don't think it really hurt the Oscars. In fact, I think it was better this way because I wasn't focused on one particular person continuing to come back out and go, and then that meant we had to wait for the next, you know, award to be presented. It was like, it was seamless. Everything was like boom, 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 boom. And I didn't, there was no breaks in between other than commercials, obviously, and the musical numbers. But I don't ever remember while watching this ever thinking, you know what, I need a good joke in here by a host, or I need, this needs to be broken up, or however. Like, I don't know. What did you think?
There are pros and cons. I think that for any awards, even if it's like the Chamber of Commerce of whatever town or city you live in, like if you have an award, if you have a ceremony of some sort, I think it can really be a mess if you don't have an MC who's kind of just the connective tissue in between all the different elements. So I think that, you know, because you do, you end up with things that are as different as, you know, random song performance with no introduction really. And, you know, somebody very esteemed like Congressman John Lewis, who helped to introduce the bit about Green Book. And then you've got, you know, a late night comedy show. Well, not even late night comedy show host, but Trevor Noah did the intro to Black Panther. And like what he said and what he translated it as was not accurate, and whether or not that's a commentary, and like, but you've got all these elements just kind of slapped together without a host. I don't think it really hurt in this case, but in some, I wouldn't say that this is the way to do it every year because it can definitely feel a lot more disjointed when there's not like a single guiding hand or face through the whole thing. It worked this year, and I think it worked as a pattern interrupter, like we talked about earlier. It's been 30 years since they did it the last time without having a host. So, nobody's seen it without a host for a while. And did it work? Sure. At the same time, it ended with Julia Roberts saying goodnight to her kids and Bradley Cooper's mom. You know, so it's sort
pretty
of like
much.
There was no host to wrap it up.
Yeah.
So that was your ending, which was a little, you know, cute but awkward.
True.
You know,
because she did announce that last award.
Yeah.
And then after they gave their acceptance speeches, then she was like, well, good night, everybody.
Good night to Bradley Cooper's mom and my kids watching at home. Bye. You know, like it was relatable, but it was awkward. Usually you do tie it up in a bow somehow with like a final joke or a final like congratulations to all the winners or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And that was missing. So I think there are certain elements that a host provides, whomever the host is, you know, the host provides that weren't in this particular telecast, but on the whole, I think it still generally worked.
Well, I kind of want to just dive right into the winners, like just go head first, because I know there's a ton of them and we're not going to be able to get through all of them, but I kind of want to go through some of the ones that were more expected, some that were unexpected, even some of the ones that were like, yeah, you know what, I just really think none of the ones that were there should have won. I thought it should have been something else. And I kind of want to hit it right off from the top and start with, where is it at? Best documentary, if I can find it, which happens to be, the best
Free Solo. Are you just looking for the winner?
I was just, yeah. I have it here, and I'm like looking for it out of the whole list.
What are you looking for?
I can help you, Eddie.
Best documentary, which was Free Solo, which, mind you, I'm pretty sure it was quite inspiring, and it was, you know, it had its...
They've been talking about this thing for like 5 years or something.
This movie?
Like the all the lead up to it. Yeah. The Alex Honnold. It is Alex, right? Honnold,
yes.
The free climber. Like, I mean, I've seen him interviewed for years about like planning this climb up El Capitan. It was El Capitan, I think, in Yosemite. Sorry, I'm without my own notes now. But like, this thing, it was excruciatingly, painstakingly mapped out and planned. And it's such an incredible feat to even talk about after the fact, let alone be able to document and like chronicle alongside. It's stunning, the achievement, the accomplishment, and just like the sheer audacity of even trying to do a climb like that with no safety. Like it's you and like a sliver of a handhold way up on the face of a cliff, essentially. Like, incredible.
See, and I wasn't too familiar with it all, but in all honesty, I'm just maybe not so much a winner, but I'm surprised that Won't You Be My Neighbor was not nominated. Like, I'm just kind of a little peeved at that because of the fact that the rest of them, they were okay. Some of them were atypical award, you know, nominees, but I think Won't You Be My Neighbor was one of those ones that clearly stood out as one above the rest. Like, just a very unique film on somebody that everybody knows. And in fact, they're about to be making a biopic on him with Tom Hanks. It just made sense to me that that film should have been nominated. And the fact that it wasn't, I think, is kind of a little bit of a egregious act, but that's me.
You know, they probably were like, oh, well, we're going to give the Oscar to Tom when it gets here, so we'll just save it for that.
Was there any of the ones that you guys saw that was like, maybe, maybe not? Yeah. Any questionable ones, Spencer? Since you, all you did was read the winners.
Are we talking about documentary still or what?
Oh, no, whatever. Any of the categories. Because obviously we got best documentary, which was feature, was just Free Solo. The best documentary short subject was on Period, End of Sentence.
They were a fun...
They were.
Acceptance speech.
It was like popcorn. Like,
it was kind of all over the place, yeah. But it broke up the monotony of an awards ceremony.
It did, because you could tell they were like clearly excited and unprepared for going up on stage.
Yeah.
Then, obviously, one of the more prominent ones, Roma, won for Best Foreign Language Film and Cinematography, which, and mind you, maybe I didn't really fully understand, or maybe I just didn't capture the gist of First Man, but I honestly thought First Man had a really great setup of cinematography, and I don't remember it being in the category of cinematography. Was it because all those scenes weren't real? Like,
I don't think that matters. I mean, if it's the shot composition and everything, then it doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you're not going to end up with a Star Wars in that category because it's all totally fake, but you're not like, I mean, it was historically accurate and relevant and whatnot. Sorry, I'm scrolling while talking. I'm so terrible at doing two things at once. Cinematography. No, actually,
it's not in cinematography.
It was not nominated.
See, and
First Man was not nominated for cinematography.
And that's interesting to me because I've mentioned it before. Roma had great cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to doubt that at all. Most of
the
film.
Yeah, it's not a surprise that it won.
Yeah. But I'm just, another one like the Won't You Be My Neighbor, I'm surprised it wasn't nominated. But then because of the fact that it won for Best Visual Effects made me think, well, maybe then all those shots that I thought were really beautiful and done well, maybe they were digital shots. And so it didn't matter. I don't know.
You had plenty of things, though, where they were in a house or in a NASA facility or, you know, whatever.
What about you, Spence? Was there any highlight in terms of the winners or people who should have won out of all the categories?
Actually, I was surprised that there was a best animated short category. I did not know that existed. And I was also surprised that Bao won, because that was the most disturbing animated short I've seen all year.
It is.
I came back.
It was. And it was weird because of the fact that I remember when we went to go see it, it was right before Incredibles 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was the lead in.
And I remember us watching it, and I remember we were sitting there, and as soon as the ending or that one scene happens where the mother eats the Bao, which happens to be her son, I'm like, this is some like sadistic, like this is like some kind of Greek tragedy type of stuff. This isn't supposed to be for a kid's animated short. But I mean, it resonated with some people, obviously.
Yeah, I heard stories about some people calling their moms after the movie was over, checking on them. And I was like,
"Aw, that's cute."
I mean, mind you, yeah, I don't know.
I just remember sitting in the theater and like everybody's like, "Oh no!" Like nobody was expecting what happened. I mean, no, you kind of
why
it was foreshadowed,
would you
but
ever
like,
expect that? It was so out of nowhere.
You're not leaving my home. I'm gonna eat you. And that was that.
Yeah. Now, can I step back for a quick second away from Bao? Only because I was looking at who was nominated in the category of Best Visual Effects, which did go to First Man. This was one that I know that like comic book movies don't typically get Oscars or you know whatever, but when you look at First Man compared to the other movies in the visual effects category, Avengers Infinity War, Christopher Robin, Ready Player One, and Solo, A Star Wars Story. And First Man is the one that got best visual effects. Like, I get it. It's the Oscars. You want your prestige movies to be getting awards and not your, you know, popcorn flicks or whatever.
True.
But I'm like, are we for real? Like, the effects in all those other movies, for the most part, were really good. And there were a lot more of them. So, it's interesting that First Man took that category, and I think it's because of the quote-unquote caliber or type of film that it is.
Well, I guess it depends on what they mean by best visuals. Like, because are you trying to say, like, hey, like, the way you did this made it look the most realistic? Because, like, if that's what their criteria is, I would give it to First Man. Because, like, you know, there was a part where I was like, oh, yeah, he's not actually in space right now because that'd be insane. So, like...
Yeah, but then if you think about that, you watch Christopher Robin and all the creatures...
Well, they all look fake, though.
No, they looked real to me.
They look pretty real.
Like, I...
You didn't believe
it because
that
they're animated creatures.
But, yeah.
I mean, they had, like, strands of hair and fur and whatnot.
Yeah,
I mean, it was
there was, like, super
detailed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spencer... But no, that actually brings up a really good point because, like, you think about it, Infinity War had a lot of special effects and visual effects in it as well. I mean, with going from, you know, space to being on other planets to being back on Earth and doing other things. I mean, there's a ton of visual effects in there that just were phenomenal. I mean, and they had the budget for it. I mean, gosh, it's Disney, you know, Disney and Marvel, powerhouse. So it is interesting, now that you mentioned it, that they went with First Man, which, mind you, we've seen them do that before, going into space. I mean, they did it with Gravity, and it was really well done. They didn't spend as much time in space as they did in Gravity, but I don't know, like, where the visual effects portion of that...
Well, and I mean, any time that you're submitting for awards consideration, technically, you generally are submitting a selection that you have prepared. You're not submitting, you don't expect the entire Academy to watch every single movie start to finish and then vote in the proper categories. Like, there's an understanding of what selection has been submitted for the category.
Any celebrations on your guys' end for certain wins and whatnot? Spencer? Like, maybe the one that you had expectations for at the beginning of this episode?
Oh, we're going to talk about that again? Okay.
Well, I mean, you mentioned that it was an expectation, but you didn't say if they actually won.
They won. Like, no, they won Best Costume and Production Design and Original Score, which are all really good things to point out. They did fantastically well, especially since I've been listening to the score since that movie's been coming out. I was listening to the Wakanda introduction theme earlier today, and, like, that one's so good. Like, there's so many good things about that movie, so I'm really glad that they won those.
It makes you wonder if, like, people are going to recognize... Because it seems like every year, every time there's a winner for certain categories, people take a page from that particular winner's playbook and they try to make it applicable to what their project is going to be for that following year. Mm. And I wonder if that's something that they're going to start doing, like with Black Panther, especially when you're somebody who wins not only in just the best costume, but production design and original score, where all three of those categories require intense research in pretty much the atmospheric portions of the film. You're not focused on the design and the costumes, but they are there, and they have to make them to where they don't look plain, but they have to fit in. And they did a remarkable job.
They're all, like, pertaining to the holistic feel of the movie. It's not like a single performance or a single song. Like, they are start to finish kind of categories.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, it builds the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty darn cool. I mean, they really are prestige categories.
Yeah, no doubt. Any other surprises? Anybody thinking of seeing anything that...
I will say the most delightful surprise.
Huh.
Not that I really had a strong preference one way or another, but Best Actress Olivia Colman... The surprise being how delightful her acceptance speech was. I mean, talk about being all over the place, but also so quintessentially British.
Yes.
And, like, just really fun.
It was
to watch the whole, like, stream of consciousness thing that happened while she was on stage. I mean, it was really fun.
She was cheeky from beginning to end, just in terms of her making a statement, then understanding that statement may not make sense, and then retracting it, and then saying something else. And just that string of consciousness that you said, it was just really like this ball of yarn unspiraling and going crazy. But still, it was fun to watch. And it looked like you could tell she was just overjoyed for winning. It's almost as if she didn't expect herself to win.
Even though she's won several of the others leading up to this.
But I think, and she does mention it, I do think it was because of the fact that she was going up against Glenn Close in her acceptance speech. That she was like, you've been my idol for so long, and I didn't want it to meet like this or whatever. And I'm like, oh, that's cute. And Glenn Close is
charming.
Laughing.
It was totally charming. And then she gets to the end, and she's like, oh, and Lady Gaga, and, like, walks away.
That's true.
It was fun.
Speaking of Lady Gaga, one of the surprises for me was that A Star Is Born only won Best Original Song throughout the entire night, because everybody else had been talking about it. And you figure the hype follows, and at least maybe a nod to Best Supporting. Like, I was really hoping Sam Elliott would have won that Best Supporting Actor role.
Totally. He was so good in that movie.
They should make a Best Supporting Actor role for, what's his name? Dave Chappelle. Because I would have given it
best cameo appearance?
Best cameo.
As not yourself?
Yes. I mean, because those two performers in that film, I would have loved to have seen more of, just because of how, well, for Dave Chappelle specifically, how much he was not his typical self, and it made the film more enjoyable. And I think that was one of those roles that I felt should have been recognized. But you can't, because there's no supporting role award.
True.
Yet,
right? Because they were going to do what was that?
Oh, category? Best popular film,
most popular film, or something ridiculous, which would have gotten the award for with A Star Is Born. But Bohemian Rhapsody winning Best Sound Mixing and Editing, as well as Film Editing. That was actually pretty unique for the fact of how well they edited that last scene for the Live Aid concert, because within timing of the actual concert itself, it actually fits really well. So, you know, somebody had to have, like, that video on one screen while they were editing this, and then all the hours into it. It makes sense, but that was all they got. Although, Rami Malek did win Best Actor for the film.
True, which, interesting. I Again, we did see Bohemian Rhapsody quite a bit ago.
We did.
We just didn't record an episode about it. So I haven't seen the other movies. So, like, I couldn't tell you how Willem Dafoe did as Van Gogh in At Eternity's Gate.
Yeah.
I saw a couple trailers for it, but that was it. I couldn't tell you how Viggo Mortensen did in Green Book. That's obviously now on my Let's Watch This Next list.
True.
Christian Bale in Vice, obviously didn't see that one either. But between the ones that I did see, A Star is Born and Bohemian Rhapsody, I would hands down easily give it to Bradley Cooper over Rami Malek, even though Malek did a great impersonation of Freddie Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, not to downplay his achievement or the very excellent speech that he gave, but Bradley Cooper, he worked his butt off in that role.
He did.
And he did a pretty darn good job of disappearing into the role.
Yeah.
And if you also
implement the fact that he also was directing the film while he was starring in it.
Totally.
That's an extra amount of work on him already. And it's pretty incredible to say that he still gave a performance that was far exceeding anything else that you would have expected from somebody who's directing and starring in it. Very rarely do you get an opportunity to see the director outshine any other performer, and he's also directing and doing everything else in the film. You know, it's just really cool to see that.
Yeah, totally. Now, I will say, to his credit, Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody, I mean, for anybody to take on a role like Freddie Mercury, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the cartoon where the fire hose goes off and it's just waving around in the air, and you've got to try to grab it and control it and bring it back to Earth and point it in a certain direction.
Yeah.
And put out the fire. Like, I think that's probably what any person, any performer would have a challenge with, trying to embody somebody like Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, he's kind of all over the place. And you certainly don't want to bottle it up, but you also have to control, you know, the direction and the timing and everything of how you exhibit certain traits, or, you know, walk a certain way, or do, I don't know, just do the whole thing. So I guess I can see all of the intricacies that go into such a big personality as that.
Yeah.
But I really was more impressed by the fully, like, in the role-ness of Bradley Cooper in A Star Is Born.
Is it a surprise to anybody that Bradley Cooper did not get nominated for Best Director here? Did it surprise any of you guys? Because I know there was a big hoopla about, like, his film was on the docket for Best Picture, but it's usually uncommon for a film to be nominated for Best Picture, but the director not be nominated for Best Director. And this was one of those situations where he didn't get nominated for Best Director. And to some, it's surprising. And there's a whole conversation online, and I'm wanting to see your guys' perspective. What do you think, Spence?
I don't know. It's kind of hard because, like, there's a few of his movies I haven't seen. So it's like, it's hard to judge, like, was this movie directed better when you haven't seen it? So that actually makes me, like, I have a hard time understanding how this whole process works.
Hmm.
Like, I know things are nominated by other people, and then, like, they vote on it, but, like, it just seems kind of opaque. But, like, otherwise, like, I don't know. Like, that's what happened.
Well, thank you for that vague and nondescript answer. Literally took 5 minutes to go around in a circle. What about you, Chad?
I think that, I mean, this conversation has come up in years past. Yeah. I think that the snub, if you will, really, I mean, it's putting in Pavel Pavlikovsky, mm-hmm, for Cold War. as a Best Director nominee, which I haven't seen the film, but I've read quite a bit about it, and it's worth paying attention to as a film for sure. I think that in a way, like, that guy took the spot that could have gone to Bradley Cooper. But in years past, you've had, like, okay, I'll stand on my soapbox for a minute.
Uh-oh.
Whenever Martin Scorsese does a movie, like, it could be garbage, and they would nominate him because of his name. And they have done this before. Was it Hugo?
Yeah.
Like, it was up for, like, visual effects and whatever, maybe a song or whatever, and then Best Director. And it was clear that it was because it was him. It wasn't because it was, you know, Gangs of New York quality or anything like that. It's because, oh, no, when Martin Scorsese's name is in here, we've got to put him on the ballot. You know?
True.
Similar to how you were just mentioning in Olivia Colman's acceptance speech, how she was like, well, Glenn Close, you're like royalty. Like, I don't know how you didn't win this. I'm sorry I took it from you. You know, like,
yeah.
You should have won because you've been in the industry for so long. Everybody knows you and you're brilliant. You know, like Meryl Streep. Whenever
Very
Meryl
true.
Streep does a movie, like Mamma Mia, she got nominated for Mamma Mia.
What?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she did.
That's upsetting.
Now, the rest of the Mamma Mia whatever didn't get much, but because it was Meryl Streep, she was nominated. So, and not to say that she's not a fantastic performer or that Martin Scorsese is not a brilliant director, but you can't just assume that because they have something worth considering that it has to be considered and that it should edge out other, you know, more deserving nominees. I think here, with regard to Best Director this year in the Academy Award, I don't know that I would say any of the people who were nominated for Best Director deserved being nominated less than Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born.
Hmm.
You know, so I don't think that they made a mistake per se, but I think given the prominence of A Star Is Born in the public consciousness and how much people, you know, appreciated it, maybe not liked it because of the ending, but appreciated it, you know, maybe it's surprising that it wasn't in the running here, but most categories only have 5 spots for nominees. Best Picture is the only one that's different.
True. And what's that, Spence?
Oh, I was looking up, Meryl Streep was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Performance by an Actress in a Motion Picture, Comedy, or Musical.
For
Mamma Mia?
Yeah, for Mamma Mia.
Because she's Meryl Streep?
Yeah.
I mean, don't misunderstand me. Meryl Streep is pretty brilliant as a performer.
Okay, yeah. Like, yes, but like, those songs from Mamma Mia, like, that was some reaching.
Yeah, for sure. What would have been the real, like, ridiculous is if she got nominated for Mamma Mia 2. Because she was barely in that movie.
I was just going to say.
I didn't see it, but I heard about it.
Lastly, I want to get your guys' thoughts. Best Picture winner for the night came out to be Green Book. And it's interesting because a lot of people are surprised by this. Mm. And there's just a lot of confusion with how the Academy sees this film altogether. Like, I don't know why Mahershala Ali was listed as supporting actor and not the lead actor.
Yeah, there's a lot I was confused by.
But the fact that they gave that film Best Picture. Okay, let's be honest. We haven't seen the film.
Right.
But from what we've gathered, it's essentially the modern day equivalent to Driving Miss Daisy. Is what I understand it to be. And it there was nothing in it, from what I hear, that should have made it stand above the rest of the other films that were mm-hmm. nominated. I don't know. What do you guys think? Because you got Green Book, Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Roma, A Star Is Born, and Vice. Right now, right off the bat, Bohemian Rhapsody was fun and it was unique. Black Panther, I'm biased. I'll give it to that any day. And then for me personally, Roma was a really great film. But I don't know. Like, I don't
know.
Yeah,
how much did you love your boy up there on stage?
Oh, heck yeah.
Giving his bro the Best Director Oscar.
Heck yeah. I was like, oh, man, you were sick. I was over there talking to the TV like if I was talking to him. I'm sorry, Guillermo. I'm sorry you were sick. It's all good, though. It's all right. You're okay.
Eddie, you might have a problem.
Hey, just don't hate, okay? We have a unique relationship. But needless to say, like, there's plenty of people or there's other films on this that I feel like, in terms of caliber, they're just more prominent. And I think, like, Black Panther alone had such a huge storyline that was unique to not just the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but just the entire history of cinema as what it is.
Yeah, but you knew they weren't actually considering it for Best Picture, though. Especially when they were like, oh, we're going to have Best Popular Film this year.
Spencer, like, the Best Picture film is about a black man being driven by a white man, and Black Panther is... I don't understand, like, how there could be any... I feel Black Panther had enough merit on its own to stand.
We know the real problem here, Eddie.
Oh, boy, here it comes.
We know the problem.
What's the problem?
Where the heck was Blindspotting?
Thank you. I was leading to that. You're right. 100%.
I know that's where you're going with this.
I mean, honestly,
I agree with you.
Honestly, we've talked about this before, and I just
original screenplay and picture went to Green Book.
Yep.
Blindspotting in a heartbeat, I would give it to them.
Yeah.
And it talked like the same concepts, the same things, just in a modern era. It's, I don't know, man. It's just frustrating. It really is. Like, if David Diggs and Rafael Casal were listening to this episode, we believe in you. We do. But it's interesting to see how they went about doing it. And mind you, we don't know budgets. We don't know what, you know, Oscar campaigns were pushed by studio, so that's all on them. But needless to say, Green Book was a surprise for me, mostly because of the fact that it didn't seem to make that much of an impact in the cinematic world for me. So I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, like on the list of these, I was like, yeah, that's probably the one that's not going to win. Like, I thought it was pretty much between like Vice and A Star Is Born.
Yeah. Or even Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, I can see that one too. It's just... Green Book just seems kind of out of left field for me.
Not to say that it's not deserved. Maybe it is deserved. Who knows? But that's, I guess, for us to find out.
It's hard for us to armchair quarterback when we haven't seen the movie.
Hey, if they can vote without seeing the movies, I don't see why I can't, like, critique without seeing.
We've seen the trailer, at least. That's enough time that they've had for them. But, yeah, I mean, here's to hoping next year, as the next Academy Awards come down the pipeline, that, you know what, we get a chance to see more and more opportunities, not just for minorities and minorities in the industry, but also opening it up more for women. There was a lot of women empowerment during this event, you know, with Regina King's speech, her and talking about how her mom raised her right and this and that. And you had a lot of just great positive empowerment and just the idea of the fact that this marks, I believe it's in the last 4 years, or last 5 years, the majority of the Best Director winners have been Hispanic. And that's really a positive thing, because of the fact that you think of all the previous winners prior, and you're looking at, like Chad said, people like Martin Scorsese, or people like James Cameron, or whomever. And it's like, to see the opportunity arise where, like, within the last 5 years, the majority of them, if not 90% of them, have been Hispanic directors. That's pretty impactful to me, and I'm pretty proud to see it.
But I would say,
uh-oh,
where are the ladies?
Very true.
Yeah,
very true.
Very male-heavy. That category in particular.
Which is, like, probably why they didn't bring back Natalie Portman from last year.
You know? So, like, that category, more than many of the others, director is... Like, there are very few women ever nominated. So hats off to Kathryn Bigelow, and we need to see more.
So that about wraps up our recap of the Oscars. Again, you can check out all of our previous episodes on our website at filmlossifers.com. Check out a couple of these upcoming weekend releases. We got Greta, Tyler Perry's A Madea Family Funeral. How many more do we need of those? And Apollo 11, which actually looks interesting. It's actually a documentary of on-scene footage from the Apollo 11 launch.
Ooh.
So it looks really interesting. I didn't know about it until today when I was doing the research, and I'm like, hey, I wouldn't mind checking that one out, maybe for wink, wink, next week's episode. We'll see. But as we said, As I said, this was a great conversation, and we look forward to seeing all the great things that are in store for cinema this year in 2019, and start looking out for a lot of those unassuming movies, because you may never know that one movie that you thought was really great but nobody would pay attention to, somebody's listening, and where were some of those people? Because we love the heck out of Blindspotting, didn't get the attention, so...
I mean, we loved quite a few things.
It's true.
Yeah. Won't You Be My Neighbor? I would say Bad Times at the El Royale. Oh, like, where was that?
Seriously.
Like, cinematography, lighting, hello. Yeah. And actress or supporting actress still. Like, yeah. Cynthia Erivo. Is Cynthia?
Cynthia Erivo.
Yeah, Erivo. Yeah. Like, fantastic.
Yep.
Anyway, sorry. That was another minor soapbox
moment. Well, not even.
I think that there were a lot of things, a lot of potentials that weren't even considered. And that happens every year, because by the time you get to the Academy Awards, it's like, oh, this is like the same seven movies in every category feels like.
Yeah. And so, and to kind of step on the edge of your soapbox, Chris Hemsworth as supporting actor for that film.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
The dude was disturbed.
He was extremely disturbed.
No God of Thunder.
Yeah, I did not think he was going to be that good of a villain. I was like, I'm just going to end up like you. And then I was like, this is terrifying.
Right? So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
Good night to Julia Roberts' kids.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.